Now, the death toll has risen to 13 after three more South African soldiers were killed on Monday in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now, last Friday, nine South African soldiers were killed in fierce fighting with M23 soldiers who claimed to have taken control of Goma. Now, government officials in the DRC have announced that the army is now controlling most of the town of Goma. However, the M23 rebels insist that they have taken control. Now, on the line with me right now to help us unpack this very, very scary scenario happening up in the east of the Congo is South African Defence Union National Secretary, Pikki Greef. Hi, Pikki, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me, and hello to the listeners.
This is such an interesting one in the sense that a lot of South Africans are asking the first question, why are we there as peacekeepers?
I think we should understand the history. This has been coming for almost two decades that South Africa has been involved there. First through the United Nations, which decided as a collective to send a peacekeeping mission to the DRC because of all the rebel groups, especially in the eastern part of the country, that already 20 years ago were engaging in armed conflict with one another and with the government of the day in the Congo. And this led to a huge people being scattered all over the place, leaving their homes and becoming refugees, etc. And so, you know, it was thought best by the United Nations to send a peacekeeping mission there, and that started out about 20 years ago, of which South Africa, amongst a lot of other countries, were a part of. And round about 2013, when South Africa was also still involved in the UN mission there, the rebels really reached the pinnacle point of their strength in terms of military operations, and the South African forces were able to eliminate most of that opposition by using air power, especially against the rebels. And so that group withdrew a bit into obscurity for a while. We also do know that the state of Rwanda, its common cause, even though that state denies it, is arming these rebels and supporting these rebels in the DRC, and that is basically due to ethnic relations or that they have with these with a specific ethnic group in the eastern part of the DRC, and they say, as Rwanda also, that those people, because of their ethnicity, they are being discriminated against by the rest of the Congolese population and state. And so after they went into obscurity by 2013, they were laid low for a while. And about 3 or 4 years ago, this group reemerged. Of course, a new generation of fighters and heavily armed, sophisticatedly armed, one must add also. And they started their activities again. And now, around about 2 years ago, a year ago, the DRC decided that they did not want the United Nations doing that mission anymore. And they asked the United Nations to leave, which the United Nations has been doing for the past year. So that, and in the meantime, the Russian-Ukraine war broke out, which means a lot of the assets that were used on that UN deployment, which was basically Ukrainian assets like helicopters and soldiers, they were withdrawn for obvious reasons. And so the UN mission really, you know, what remained of it is the bare backbone of it. And then the SADC countries, the Southern African Development Community countries, they decided to make a pact and agree to send a combined force of SADC countries, including South Africa, to Mozambique to replace that UN mission. And so they really, that's how they ended up there a year ago. And yeah, so while the UN is still there in part, but withdrawing, the SADC countries that took over. And so with the resurgence and the rearmament, as I explained, it was a lesson hard learned the past week, where these rebel groups then surged into action and used their sophisticated weaponry, and they really have the hand on the battleground. That's the one part of the story. The other part of the story is we are on record. Very many defense analysts and experts are also on record over the past year when this deployment first occurred that we were concerned, and very, very much rightly so, concerned that the South African troops and that mission there at SADC were not proper are not properly supported in terms of logistics, in terms of firepower, and any of those things that you need to carry a mission successfully.
Right.
And I think that, you know, like they say, the proof of the pudding is in the eating, and unfortunately, we've tasted that this week.
Yeah, it's been a deadly week in that area. Look, M23 is saying they've taken control of Goma. What are your thoughts on this? Have they taken control of the city, and what does it mean?
Well, we must remember, well, number one, we must remember that M23 relies heavily also on propaganda warfare. So, you know, most of the things that they say are probably overstretched and exaggerated, but you can also not just discard them for what they're saying. Goma is very strategic in this whole mission for the simple reason that the MONUSCO, the UN base, there is also part of the airport of Goma. And that, of course, is a strategic asset to the whole operation because that's where your peacekeeping forces would have their equipment land and their weaponry brought into the country and their troops and so on. So if you lose control of Goma and you lose control of the airport, you are basically you know, stuck in the base and you can't move. So the current situation is that our are in their base. They are still armed. They are defending themselves whenever they get attacked. And around this airport is the Democratic Republic of the Congo's troops, of course, or to stop rebels from taking the airport. And the rebels on the other side are trying to gain you know, the upper ground and get the airport. So they occupy basically the reality of the situation is the rebels are occupying parts of Goma. And the DRC Defense Force is occupying other parts of Goma, including the airport. So this is also the big reason why these three casualties occurred on Saturday. It's the crossfire of mortar bombs between the DRC's Defense Force and the rebels that some of those mortars fell into the South African base. And that's how our members suffered those casualties.
Speaking of casualties, I've seen many reports of families saying that there hasn't been proper communication about troops who've been sent to this war, and families saying they haven't heard from loved ones, they don't know what's going on, they just know that, you know, people are dying and there's no clarity on what exactly is happening. Has communication been bad?
Very bad, unfortunately. You know, unfortunately, and you know, this is a thing that people who live in a peaceful country don't realize is that the first thing that gets cut during war is communication. You know, your cell phone communication becomes destroyed, your internet gets locked down by one of the parties for various reasons. So you have very intermittent communication opportunities with the forces deployed there. We do have communication with some of our members from time to time when they have an opportunity, you know, to get through. They also try their best, but yeah, it's really a bad situation in terms of communication, and one can understand that the families are concerned.
Now, Pookie, you say you have communication with some members. What have you heard? What's happening there? How are they doing?
Well, you know, obviously they know that they're in a bad situation, but I think what I've noticed over the past few days is that we have members with a lot of resolve there. They are very well trained and disciplined. Their situation is quite simply that they say, look, we are stuck in this, basically isolated in this base with this fighting going on around us. There's not so much at this stage anymore direct fighting between themselves and the rebels. It's basically, as I said, between the DRC forces and the rebels. But our members are holding out. They're waiting to hear what the orders are, you know, in terms of will there be a replenishment of troops and forces. Basically, you know, and this is unfortunately the reality where a soldier will often find themselves that they are simply, you know, pawns in the game of geopolitics and diplomacy, because obviously behind the scenes there's talks going on about how to maintain the posture of a peacekeeping force there, and not bend over to a country like Rwanda, who's intimidating people and sponsoring armed militia. And of course, the states involved also have to take into account the safety of their troops and opinions at home. So it's a fine balancing act for any country and any government to try and deal with. But I must say that the South African government have not done themselves any favor with the way that they've communicated during this entire chaos. You know, when the first casualties occurred on Tuesday, they waited an entire 72 hours before they even issued any media statement on it. One can, you have to inform loved ones, etc., but at least the public has the right to know, you know, to transparency, to know that there's the conflict scales have escalated, has been casualties, and they need reassurances. You know, they need reassurances that we're in control, we're making a plan. One doesn't have to disclose, you know, detail that will give a strategic advantage to the enemy forces, but you do have to show a certain amount of leadership, at least show that you're in control and communicate that you are, there are plans afoot, and try and, you know, calm the panic. The problem is, when you remain as a leader, you remain silent during chaotic times. That really erodes the trust of those who are affected.
Now, another big conversation that's been happening is the fact that some school of thought thinks that our troops are not trained enough. Then there's another school of thought that says they are trained enough, they just don't have the enough weaponry and support for the mission on the ground. What is your stance on this? Are we not trained enough, or is it that we don't have enough support in weaponry and machinery, etc.?
Let me give you the true facts, and I base these facts on the fact that I've been involved in the Defence Force since 30 years ago, and I've been involved in the Union for the best part of 25 years. So, you know, I think I know some of the facts, and I can tell you our troops are properly trained. There's no question about it. Our troops have been properly trained for generation after generation. There's nothing wrong with their training or their discipline. The problem is the support, the maintenance of equipment, the availability of equipment, the fact that there is no air support, no close air support to lift troops, to take troops somewhere, to transport them, to transport goods, the fact that we are there with without the proper defense systems, radar systems that would be needed to fend off mortar attacks and that kind of thing. And the fact that we have no air power. You cannot carry a mission like that successfully without those factors. You know, I said to someone, it's almost like having a Rolls Royce in the garage, but you can't drive it because it's broken. And that's exactly what our defense force is. We've got a lot of redundant equipment in the sense that it has been maintained for, or not been maintained for such a long time, that it has become outdated and unusable in many instances. You must remember that the new generation weapons sometimes even require software updates and stuff like that. So it's not as simple as a gun or a thing that the public might think about. It's sophisticated electronic equipment that needs updating, even on the fighting vehicles and in the aircraft. And if that kind of maintenance is not routinely done and timeously done, then you face the situation that our troops are facing now. So it becomes very irresponsible to deploy your troops in circumstances like that, because when escalation occurs, then exactly the results that you see now are the results that are to be expected.
Yeah, that leads me to my next question. Can we even afford to be there? Not only from a financial perspective with, you know, the equipment that's needed, but the lives that are out there that are not supported to be there.
Yeah, I think that's a question that, you know, I don't want to give you an answer whether we should be there or not. That's a politician's decision, to take a political decision. The union's mandate is not political. What I can say is that, you know, don't deploy your troops if you don't have the necessary resources, financially and otherwise, to make it a 100% success. In the military, there are no half measures. If you want to do things half-hearted and halfway, then you will definitely suffer major casualties. And let's not minimize what's happened. This is one of the biggest military that South Africa and tragedies that South Africa's armed forces has faced, not only in the past 30 years. It comes second only to the Battle of Bangui and the problems that we saw there, from which we apparently learned no lessons. But it's one of the biggest tragedies ever in the Defence Forces history.
That's quite tragic. That's very tragic. So what's next? What happens? What do we do now? What are we waiting for? What happens?
Well, I can simply answer that question by what I've seen and heard from the government itself, what they've stated in public, and that is that South Africa is not leaving that mission. The peacekeeping mission will go on. They are heavily and rightfully so protesting against Rwanda's involvement and the fact that they armed these rebels and the fact that our own forces are being attacked. And the UN's intervention is being asked, and I've also seen reports that, of course, top government officials have been in contact with the government officials of Rwanda and the SADC countries and so on. So it's really for SADC to make a collective decision on whether they want to, lose all face in this whole story and withdraw from the mission, or whether they want to stick to the mission. But if they want to do so, they have to make very quick military decisions about troops, equipment, and so on. The thing that people don't realize, and I don't know if they always factor it into it, is that we've still got the armed forces of Angola, of Namibia, and Botswana, all three of them quite powerful armed forces in context of their countries. They haven't contributed much to this mission at all. So there's still a lot of reserve military power available if the decision is that the mission will remain, notwithstanding what's going on.
Now, a big question is, why should the average South African care about what's happening there?
Well, the thing is, if there's destabilization, there's been so many people that have been displaced by this ongoing war over the past two decades. It's over 6 million people that I've heard the latest reports. And of course, this new round will displace hundreds of thousands more people as they flee the war zone. So those people who complain about our activities there or our involvement there should take into mind, where do those displaced people go? It causes economic hardship in the entire region, which causes a flood of people fleeing their countries. And some of them, many of them, will end up in South Africa eventually and become an economic burden to this country also. And so trade takes a big backseat when war is on the go and when there's destabilization. We must remember that the DRC has a lot of resources, mineral resources, that now basically it cannot be commercially, to 100% exploited to the benefit of the DRC or the rest of Southern Africa's economy. And the normal economic activities can't carry on in Southern Africa as long as there's destabilization in that region.
Right. Now, you mentioned we've got troops in Angola, Namibia, Botswana, Mozambique. Do we have any troops there? I know there was some trouble in that region, which is really next door.
Yeah, Mozambique, we were there for a year and then we withdrew. We declared that to be a success, which I think is a bit of a stretch. Because there we were also under-resourced, but we were better resourced than we are in the DRC. So we were involved there for a year in 2023, and then we withdrew at the start of 2024. I might have my years wrong now, but anyway, we're not involved there anymore. And so, Mozambique is basically, fighting its own fight against those insurgents there. And we should be very concerned about that also, because really our involvement there didn't contain the situation at all. It's still the same as before we arrived, and we should be very worried because that is right on our doorstep.
Yeah, it really is. Now, Piggy, as we wrap it up, anything else you'd like to share your thoughts with regards to this war with the M23 rebels out in eastern Congo?
I think just if I can make a call to all South Africans, let's stop the negativity. It is a bad situation to be in. It is a tragedy. But let's back our troops. Those guys are standing strong. South Africans, we know what our resilience is. We'll survive. I think we're going to get through this.
That's really well said. Thank you so much, Bicky. We appreciate it. Some nice, insightful thoughts there. Appreciate it.
Thank you.